Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is Veronica Monet of the Shame-Free Zone. Thanks again for tuning in this Monday night. My guest this evening is Rachel Adair. She's going to be talking to us about a brand new book of hers. I've heard it might be a little similar or evocative of 50 Shades of Grey. But she's going to tell us all about it. Rachel, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica. Thanks for having me on.
All acts of love and pleasure. Speaking of pleasure, all acts of love and pleasure are her rituals. That's the name of the book.
Yes. This book was published in 2009, so I've been promoting it for some time now, but I do have a new book coming out as well, which follows the same characters and the same storyline of the time.
What's the name of the new one?
The new one is called The Initiation of Lady Caroline.
Ooh, okay. So, is it true or am I mistaken that there are shades of 50 shades of gray in this somewhere? Maybe, kinda.
Well, it's just very resonant as far as it is an erotic novel that has some S&M and BDSM characteristics to it. It's more than the 50 shades of gray as far as the storyline that's involved with it as well.
Yeah. Well, you're actually born and raised in the bayous of southern Louisiana, right?
I am.
I don't know. Is that a wild and crazy area in the United States or kind of down home southern? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I think there's many True Blood listeners, viewers out there in your listener network.
Okay.
I can't say Louisiana's all like that, but you know that we are spicy folks, that's for sure. I'll put it that way.
Okay, spicy folks. Okay. So, in this first book, All Acts of Love and Pleasure Are Her Rituals, you follow a priestess, right?
Yeah.
And she's kind of the embodiment of Aphrodite with equal doses of the primal goddess and Artemis mixed in.
Yeah, she is actually born into a long line of healers and mystics. And the predictions that come before her life cause her father to hide her from her true power. So she's growing up with all this power inside of her and really doesn't know how to focus it. So she has to find her own way through her life, discovering her own power and what her path is. And because of that, she ends up being guided by one of her mentors, the local doctor, who kind of teaches her about the paths of submission and how to gain power through giving over to another.
That actually sounds a lot like 50 Shades of Grey. What do you think the fascination is with dominance and submission now? It seems like it's actually kind of gone mainstream with women. Do you have any opinion about that?
I think it's got taking a power back from it. Because people think that vulnerability and submission are a negative trait, but it's really a very powerful place to come from. And these books and these elements are really showing women that we do have power in these places, and that honoring that place inside of us of not having to be in control of everything all the time is a very powerful place to be.
Well, Okay, I think the listeners are going to need a little more explanation of how it is that by submitting your power, you gain power. How would you, please, tell us more.
Well, in the roles of the BDSM community, it is the submissive that has all of the control. It's the dominant who is giving the pleasure, actually, who is in service. So if the bottom, so to speak, doesn't want something to happen, all she has to do is say so, and the dominant will stop. So it's basically, he is there to provide pleasure for his partner.
Okay. Now, for some people, it's a bit of a stretch to think about being dominated or having pain administered, that would be pleasurable. And do you draw distinctions between pain and dominance?
I personally think there's a fine line between pleasure and pain. And between pain and dominance is a different tightrope. It's all about the unknown, really. It's falling into the power of the unknown and allowing something to come to you.
So what would be, I'm wondering what are some of the things that happen in the book that are BDSM oriented?
Oh, she falls under, she goes to the queen, and the queen introduces her to the bondage aspects, and which causes her insight to grow in certain ways. And then the doctor refines that for her.
Okay. Well, give us a little bit more. Okay. So he refines that for her. How does he do that?
He teaches her how to hone her skills through the tantalizing sensualities of the pain, I guess you would call it.
Huh. Okay. Do you have a passage about that you could actually share with us?
I have a little passage here that might give some elements to it.
Okay. I'd love to hear some of it.
Okay. This one is between her and her husband, who she introduces to this path.
Okay.
Caroline found a new satisfaction about surrendering to a man she knew so well. She felt safe, as she knew he would never disrespect her or bring her harm. But the power of his dominance brought out a certain quality that was extremely enticing and exciting. It seemed to her that neither of them had any idea what was to come next. She found both her power and his rising to full and complete trust. A new bond was being forged between them. It goes on into some triple X moments.
Oh, come on, give us a triple X moment, will you?
So soon.
don't be so shy. This is a shame-free zone, you know what I'm saying? go for it.
Okay, I'm getting flushed just thinking about it.
Okay. I see that.
A new bond was being forged between them. He pulled her up and turned her to face him. He lifted her hips onto the table. She wrapped her legs around him and pulled him into her. She pulled off his shirt so that their sweat mingled. He licked the sweat from her neck and sucked it off her breasts. She needed the muscles on his back, pulling him tighter into her. They climaxed together, but Caroline only wanted more. She licked him longingly. He carried her into the back room where he had a chair and a small cot. He sat her in the chair with her on top of him. She kissed him hard. She moved down and slid out of the chair onto her knees, where she placed her head in his lap, sucking him back to life. He grabbed her by the hair and pulled her on top of him, where she rode him with one leg draped over the arm of the chair. Her breasts were in his face. He lifted her as he stood with her, still covering him, and laid her down the cot. She pushed him off of her. No, she said forcefully. No more. He breathed a heavy sigh, rolled away from her, and held his stiffness. I said no, she said as she mounted him. When I say no in this condition, I mean for you to take it, she said as she grabbed his hair and pounded him into her. Abruptly, she stood and walked through the curtain out of the room. He followed her. You want more?
we'll take a little break and let our listeners wipe the sweat off their brows. What? That is very hot, and I like it. I like the fact that she says, when I say no, I mean take it. That's very, very hot. So is this, I'm wondering, is this a reflection of your personal life by chance?
You know, this book was written during a time where I didn't have much action in my life, so I think it's more of a lot of fantasies happening. But I'm happy to say that since the book has been published, it's causing a lot more of my fantasies to be fulfilled.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that's great. So everybody should go write an erotic novel, and then their sex life will get better, right?
Or at least read one.
At least read one.
Then you have a little bit more knowledge, and your fantasies can be broadened.
Yeah. So
you can read the passages that you like to your partner, and it might spark some different things happening in your bedroom or elsewhere.
Absolutely. Now, are you one of these women who masturbates while you're reading a trashy novel?
I've been known to do that.
What do we call this? I think it's one armed. If you gotta hold the book,
it's so hard to turn the pages.
Exactly. Yes, it's true. Well,
I did have to do my research before I wrote the book, for sure.
Well, yeah. Speaking of the research into this book, it's actually set back in what time period?
Well, I like to say it's back in the day. Back in the day where women were revered for their powers before they're chastised, being witches. I'd say it was probably like 1500s, 1600s.
And you're looking at pagan and mystic storylines as well, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's a little quote from your bio here. It says, when I was looking for books, I captured my erotic sensibilities as well as my interest in pagan and mystic storylines, I searched the shelves for something that went there. I quickly realized I wouldn't find what I was looking for. There are many books of pagan fiction and many more of erotic fiction, but in order to find the story I was seeking, I had to write it myself. What was it specifically that you were seeking, Rachel?
Well, I guess I was seeking something.
Why were you looking for this? I mean, I think that would be like the question, really. You know, why were you looking for this?
Why was I looking for it? Gosh, I mean, is it weird that I like sex and I want to enjoy people having it?
But I mean, it's very specific. You want a pagan and a mystic storyline. So I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a woman that likes porn, but I also am a woman, and I love a good storyline. I want characters that I can really enjoy, I love dramas.
It could have been something contemporary, but it's pagan and mystic. So I'm wondering, does that speak to an aspect of your own life? Would you consider yourself pagan? Or?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. I've definitely, after my Christian upbringing in Southern Louisiana, found myself moving into the pagan realm. I mean, I was brought up in the country and very much earth-based reality, although it's, kind of at the edge of the Bible Belt. But the more I got in tune with the way of the earth and into the holistic lifestyle, the more in tune I got with the pagan aspects of it as well, and the earth-based worship for lack of a better word, have really sang out to me. It made a whole lot more sense of looking at what is around us and in nature and in the beauty inside of us than it did to go to some building and call out to some etheric god that, you know, might one day bring us to heaven, when if you look around us, we're pretty much there for the most part.
Well, you and I actually met at the EcoSex Symposium in Portland, Oregon, at the beginning of this month, and I'm wondering, how did that symposium strike you? What was, like, you know, your favorite part, your least favorite part?
My favorite part was the bridging of ecology and sexuality, because I've had those two pieces inside of me, and I haven't seen that bridge yet of this erotic sensuality and then the permaculture and the earth-based saving the planet thought patterns, and bringing that together in the EcoSex Symposium is beautiful. And I really liked the talk about the earth and compersion, and the earth as lover.
Yes, and Serena Anderlini Delafreo, who was talking very much about, you know, we've talked about Mother Earth, and that's always been with us, having expectations from our mother that she provide for us and take care of us. And if we start revisioning our Mother Earth as our lover Earth, that we might be more caretaking and nurturing of her.
Right.
Yeah, I really liked that as well. I thought that was a great, great paradigm shift, really, to start thinking about Mother Earth as lover. In what ways does that call to you? Does it translate to something specific in your life when you think about Mother Earth as lover?
I think it translates in so many different ways. It's hard to put into one short sentence.
I know for me, I feel like I have a sensual connection, you know, like the land that I live on right now feels very sacred to me, very sensuous. I love to have the windows open and the doors open so that I can be really just immersed in with the birds and the plants and the animals, the different changes in the sky, you know, the sunrise, the sunset, the moon coming up and the stars. It's just, it is, I think, very sensual, at the very least sensual, but it's an invitation to eroticism. And certainly what lovers don't find themselves looking at the stars and the moon together? You know?
Oh, certainly. I'm very compelled to the different aspects of the moon. I love watching the cycles of the moon and where it rises at night and where it sets.
Now, that actually evokes a lot of pagan tradition as well. For our listeners who might not really understand what pagan is, can you give them some idea?
Sure. It's basically looking at the cycles of the earth and moving in the rhythms of nature. And there's different practices that pagans do, or Wiccans, or whatever tradition that you follow, that regard and honor the different cycles that nature provides to us. Mm-hmm. And evoking those aspects of it in order to be able to enhance the part of your life, you know, looking at the waxing moon as bringing the energy into your life, the new moon as setting intentions of what you want to create through that waxing moon, and then the waning moon where the moon is getting lighter and smaller, what are we letting go of? What can we release during this time? So it's a very intentional practice, and I think it can be done really personally without too much yahooism around it too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it really can. Sometimes it can just be as simple as the statement, but, you know, do no harm, right?
Yeah, totally.
Just like really acknowledging your connection and the fact that everybody, all the other plants and animals that are residing on this planet with us deserve to have dignity and at least the right to survive as a species.
My life shifted a lot when I started realizing that I I was a part of my environment, and that I can make a difference in the world where I walk, you know, even if it's just picking up a piece of trash, you know, instead of looking at it and going, oh, this place is so trashy, I can walk by and pick it up and make that difference in it. Or I can weed my front yard, you know, or plant a tree in my neighborhood. All that has really connected me a lot more to what my place is in this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so you mentioned True Blood earlier. Does that have any connection to your novels? Do your novels bring up vampirism as well? Or?
Well, yeah, it's from Louisiana. That's why I mentioned it. But,
okay.
I could see that show gives me hope for my novel being turned into a movie or something, because it's so sexual and bloody and gory. I mean, my novel has none of that blood and gore in it, but, you know, as graphic as that show is, I think my book would be a great HBO series.
Absolutely. Well, you know, let's see, a friend of mine just got a reality TV show on Showtime called Polyamory, Dating in Marriage.
All right.
Yeah, Kamala Devi. She's doing a show there on Showtime, and it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. It's really shifting paradigms around poly. Now, are you poly or bisexual, or how would you describe
I am poly understanding, and I'm starting to be poly practicing. And my book is definitely an exploration of that. Like, what is it to be in an open relationship? My heroine actually has two husbands, which I think is the way to go, quite honestly.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's your fantasy world, right? Having
sure. Both men fulfill different things, you know, and they all share the same bed. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when did you start writing? Were you, were you drawn to this at an early age, or is this something you just recently started doing?
It's something I started doing in my 30s, like probably when I turned 30 in 2000, about 12 years ago. I was really drawn to acting when I was younger, so I've always been interested in the character development and getting inside of a character and finding out what makes them tick and make the choices that they're making. So I studied acting through college, and I think that really was a big part of developing the characters in my book.
Yeah, I would see how that would go hand in hand. If you're acting, you have to draw upon, okay, well, who's my character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, and why are they making these choices, and how are they relating to this other person and the scene?
Yeah. So you said that your books will end up inspiring your personal life. Have any of your readers shared with you that your books have inspired them to go out and try some of these fantasies in real time?
Some of my readers have said, you know, there were things in there I've never, ever heard of before.
Like what? Oh, you know we want to hear what that is. Like what?
I think a lot of the... I don't want to do any spoilers, but there's the women on women, and there's men together, and then her with her two men, and how they relate to each other, and then there's a little bit of anal, and then there's some the bondage scenes, and then there's this shapeshifter that comes into the picture, too. That's the form of the Great Spirit.
Wow. So you really just cover all the bases there.
Yeah, I tried to.
Yeah. I know that you talk about this all acts of love and pleasure are her rituals, being a provocative tell to the end of an era. So your protagonist is the last of a long line of healers. And,
yeah, that's
Go ahead. Tell
That's
us more
what
about
I was
that.
Really focused on is looking at, because I have a lot of remembrances of being chastised for being a witch. You know, I think a lot of women can relate to that, and a few of my readers have told me that it's like they can recognize that within not themselves, within the lineage that we come from as women. You know, we have been burned at the stake and hanged from trees for using herbs for healing. And so I went into her life saying, what would it be like if there was one woman that actually witnessed this shift in the view, and how would that affect her life?
So you've written this book where it starts to shift and women start to get persecuted for being witches?
Right, exactly.
Wow. Okay. So that's pretty dramatic. So the burning times, don't they go on for about 300 years?
Yeah, I can't say that my book is historical reality fiction, like fact to fact. You know, you can't take it as like that happened in history. I don't think my heroine was actually, you know, a real person that was living sometime in life, but definitely it's loose historical fiction in that regard. That's why I didn't want to put like a time zone on it.
Yeah.
So that could happen at any of those times.
Well, now, is your protagonist, is she a witch? Is that what she considers herself, or is she just a healer that gets accused of witchcraft?
She's a healer, and she's she has foresight, and she can heal with her hands. She has different powers, but, like, witch is not a language in their vocabulary until further in, towards the end of the book. And her love for her second husband comes from Spain, where people are being burned, where the Inquisition is happening. So he sees this going on, and that's kind of why he's fleeing his country, so that he could find safety elsewhere. And they're all part of this secret society that her mother and her mother before her were the high priestesses in the secret society.
So, and high priestesses for what? As healers, as different prostitutes?
Well, they're mystics and goddesses.
Okay.
They are moon worshippers.
Yeah, do you engage in moon worshipping?
Yeah, I do.
Well, tell us about that. What's that like?
I'm part of a 13 moon priestess circle, and part of that initiation process is sitting in circle with women for 13 months, honoring different aspects of the goddess for each aspect of the moon. And it's about manifesting and getting into your power and looking at the different aspects of the goddess, and the Great Mother, the destroyer, the goddess of death, the lover, the primal goddess, the crone.
Well, what about the crone? This is something our current culture really doesn't embrace that.
Yeah,
so I'm
right.
Wondering how does that fit, you know, fit into an empowered goddess? How would she think of herself as a crone?
Well, the crone is wisdom. Wisdom incarnate. And it's also, could be a joker. You know, when my grandmother was older, she was like, I don't care what people think about me. I'm just going to say what I feel. And I think the crones have that wisdom to be able to just give it to you in the most concise and real way possible. And you learn from it without having all those padding happening around it. And part of my heroine's journey is through with her grandmother. that is the healer of the land. She's kind of the keeper of the land, and she's basically timeless, but she has all the knowledge that of the moon and of the goddess worship and of the land that she passes on to Caroline. And when the time is waning of the rituals of the land is when her time wanes too.
What are the roles of the men during this time period? Are the men powerful as well? Or so I think this is a concern for a lot of people when they think about goddesses and powerful women and crones, that they start to think that men are somehow going to have to take a back seat. So,
right. What about the men?
Is it the matriarchy or? what kind of men do you have in your book?
And the men are high priests, and the men are holding the power along with the women, and definitely a big support for the women also.
Oh, a big support for them, okay. So they're more working together, perhaps?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. You might hear hesitancy in my voice, and that's only in regards to Caroline's father hides her from her power and hides her from the society because of the predictions about her life changing and being persecuted towards the end of her life. So he wants to kind of shift her path for her, so in a means of protection. So he doesn't encourage her power. And in that vein, he's also persuading her first husband to not encourage her power as well. So she kind of doesn't feel so powerful with those men. But there are other men that come along that encourage her and help her grow.
Well, you know, there's a line from your book, "The moon is my mother. I am forever bound to her light."
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about Caroline vowing herself to the moon. What? I'm assuming this is something that you have done.
Yeah.
So what is, can you help our female listeners at least understand, hopefully the men too, but there might be some female listeners here that this is kind of calling to them. They might have kind of a distant memory of this. Can you explain to them its significance?
Yeah, well, the moon is definitely watching over us as we go through our lives. And, you know, they call the moon the mother and the sun the father.
Mm-hmm.
La luna. And she does have those aspects of her, the maiden, the mother, and the crone. The maiden, the wife, the mother, and the crone. And and if we just look at those four aspects, that resonates throughout our lives. So we can follow that in the different quarters of the month in itself, or in the different quarters of the year, or in the different quarters of our lives, and see where we sit in those places and how that resonates through ourselves, because the moon is what pushes and pulls us. You know, those of us who are bleeding are in relationship specifically with the moon because of those cycles. So you can look at what time your blood happens in the flow of what phase of the moon it's in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, women really have a special and unique connection to the moon because of the fact that it does control our menstrual cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So, I remember traveling to Glastonbury, England, quite some time ago, actually, probably about 15 years ago. And I was in search of goddess sites. Specifically, we were looking for Celtic goddess sites. And we went to Glastonbury because the Glastonbury Abbey is actually built over a sacred pagan site for the Celtics. And it runs over a little river that runs kind of red because there's iron in it. And it was meant to be kind of like menstrual blood. And then it there is a portion of it that's covered by an insignia, and they usually call that chalice well, because it's like a spring that's coming up from bubbling up from the ground. And it's very interesting because this cover is actually a round circle pierced by a sword, which is meant to be the yoni and lingam, or otherwise, the vulva and the phallus. Was an amazing journey for me. I went to something called the top of something called the Tor, and it's this mountain that you walk around it in concentric circles to get to the top. And up at the top there is a tower, and it's a little bit dilapidated, as is most things in England are. And I went there on a night when there was a full moon. And just the very fact that I'm telling you, I went there on a night that there was a full moon. I was by myself.
Wow.
And it's late at night, but this little village of Glastonbury, which is where the Mists of Avalon, the story of Avalon, King Arthur and his knights, it all happens right there in this area that is now known as Glastonbury.
And when I went to
the top of the tour, there were actually three modern-day witches from New York City singing. Now, they were recording, they didn't have professional recording equipment, they were just practicing their singing. They were actually cutting an album, and I thought it was just a very surreal moment. I'm in England, there's a full moon, the clouds are wafting by. I've just climbed to the top of the tour at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and there are three witches from New York City working on their next album.
Beautiful.
Oh, great. It was just a beautiful, wonderful trip. And there was, at the Abbey, you walk into what's known as the Bishop's Kitchen. Every single item in there is marked. So here's the Bishop's ladle, and here's his pot, and here's his, everything, his fork, it's all labeled. And then you walk out, and to the right, there's this huge stone, which is kind of egg-shaped, and it's like it's been discarded, it's pushed off to the side. And I felt drawn to this stone. Now, I was during my moon, I was on my menstrual cycle, and I walked over to the stone, and I felt this urge to sit on it, and highly irregular. I mean, I'm in a public place, everything's marked, but the stone is not marked, and it feels like it's calling me to sit on it, and so there's a little indentation, and I thought maybe this is where the ancient women ground their corn or something. I didn't know what this little indentation was. But I sat on it. And as soon as I did, I felt electrified and connected to the core of Mother Earth. It was just a really wonderful feeling. And as my travel mates came out, this was during the day when we went to tour this, and I was actually with other women that I was traveling with, I said, you have to sit on the rock. And they all came over and one by one took turns sitting on the rock. And each woman, as she sat upon the rock, her eyes would light up and she'd go, oh. And we were all like, well, what is this rock and why doesn't it have a label? It seems so significant to us. It was certainly more significant than the Bishop's pot or label.
Right.
We're like, this rock is so important. And so then we broke for lunch, and each of us went off in our own direction for lunch. We came back about an hour later, and we had each found something out about this rock. And it'd be like a little tiny paragraph in a tourist guide.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out, I bet you can tell me what this rock was about, can't you?
I have an idea.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that the ancient Celtic women menstruated upon the rock.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yes, and so that's what the little indentation was. It was there to catch their blood. It was a very sacred rock that was used in their ceremonies. And here we were, completely blind to this information, and yet our DNA was crying out to reenact this ancient ritual.
Yeah. I think we all have the memories within us. Mm-hmm. And these stones are still in place. These stones have memories, too. And they do share their information with us when we hold them or touch them. I think that's why we're so drawn to crystals.
Yeah. I absolutely felt like this rock was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I've been up on that tour. It's a beautiful, mystical place. You can feel the vibration of the earth there.
Oh, you have been there. Yeah. I'm assuming you visited Chalice Well. We stayed in a little bed and breakfast, and every morning when I woke up, I'd look out over Glastonbury, which is also Avalon, and the mists of Avalon would in fact be blanketing the little town of Glastonbury. It was so magical and so beautiful, and we had a little lamb. So we'd come into the kitchen every morning while we were having our breakfast, you know, the traditional British breakfast of tomatoes and ham and English muffins. And this little lamb would come in there for her bottle of milk.
Sweet.
Which was in the refrigerator. So somebody would pull out the bottle of milk, and she'd stand there in the kitchen drinking her bottle of milk. It was so cute.
That's precious. My experience in Glastonbury was kind of overshadowed by the Twin Towers exploding.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's
terrible, Rachel. I was in Hawaii when that happened, and it really does put an end to everything.
Yeah. It was a mystical place to be, though, that's for sure. I felt the support and warmth coming instead of the call to war and call to arms that was happening over here.
Oh, yes, it's so true. So your book covers polyamory, it covers BDSM, it covers witchcraft, the Mists of Avalon.
It covers love in all its forms.
Right there, Marion Zimmer Bradley's The Mists of Avalon. It's a book that you referenced to, as well as Starhawk's Fifth Sacred Thing. And you talk about your process here, that it, as you drifted off to sleep at night, you lived in Carolyn's world.
Yeah.
You drove through the streets of Los Angeles for hours at a time to organize community-based tree planting projects. Carolyn's tale passed the time. She became such a strong character in your psyche that you felt if you didn't sit down and write her story, you couldn't possibly be taken over her if you received a good blow to the head. That's funny. You've actually got a website here, which is indiegogo.com.
Indiegogo.
indiegogo.com/Rachel Adair Dawson.
Yeah.
And the purpose of the money that you're raising here is to publish your book, or?
Yeah, to publish my second novel, The Initiation of Lady Caroline, which goes into the kind of the in-between pages that is only alluded to in the first book. So the first book covers her whole life, but there's a lot of little sentences and the stuff that happens in between the chapters that my characters are starting to tell me about. So this book dives even deeper into the BDSM elements between her and the doctor, her mentor, and the relationships between the two men who are her husbands, and how they help her grow into her power.
Well, you were actually going to share with us another couple of paragraphs or maybe a page from your book, were you not?
Yeah, I can share with you a page from the new book. And I've been doing self-publishing because I love having control of my own work and being able to keep the rights to my characters and knowing how I can promote the book. So that's what I'm raising the funds for, is to continue doing that self-promotion and getting the editing done for the book and the cover and everything together so that I can continue to do the self-promotion for it without having to sign my characters away to some big publishing house.
Now, you know, speaking of, before you read to us, mm-hmm. I was just noticing you've got all these different categories here. So if somebody contributes $5, then you will, they'll get a personalized thank you from you.
A big fat thank you.
Yes, a big fat thank you. If they contribute $50, then they would get something called a nice meal, which is a paperback copy of The Initiation of Lady Carolyn with their name in the acknowledgments, plus an ebook of All Acts of Love and Pleasure Are Her Rituals. You've already got one claimed on that.
Mm-hmm.
If they contribute $250, they get a $100 gift plus previews of the chapters of The Initiation of Lady Carolyn if they are written, which some are, and they are hot and steamy.
Yeah.
If $1,000 gets you Tie Me Up and Spank Me, which is the autographed paperbacked copies, acknowledgement, hot and steamy previews, and special hardcover Mushroom Fairy, plus your name, a character. Oh, my God, they get to be a character in the story.
They get to name a character in the story.
Yes, they get to name a character in the story. And if they go all the way up to, well, $2,000, I'll do pretty much anything. But seriously, the autographed paperback copies, acknowledgement, hot and steamy preview, special hardcover Mushroom Fairy, plus name a character within reason, and a sensuality salon created in your town in the continental United States. Sensuality salons are non-sexual afternoon or evening workshops that entice senses, invoke unconditional love of Aphrodite, and offer practical applications to embody the erotic in your everyday life. And the donation does not include airfare. Now, $5,000, you're my hero. They get an autographed paperback copy, big fat acknowledgement, hot and steamy previews, and special hardcover Mushroom Fairy, plus name a character within reason, and a sensuality salon created in your town anywhere in the world. Sensuality salons, again. Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about sensuality salons? When did you start doing these? Didn't you do one at the EcoSex Symposium?
Yeah, I did one each day there on Saturday, both on Saturday and Sunday.
So what was people
I learned about them through my priestess circle and the 13 moon oracle that I do. It's through the goddess of love, which is Aphrodite.
Uh-huh.
And the goddess of love in the 13 moons is the pure essence of unconditional love. That's why I say it's a non-sexual experience, because it takes you out of that element of expecting that sexual next step in sexuality. You know, like, I know for me throughout my life, if someone is touching me sensuously, then it's kind of like in the back of your head, you know, oh, they're going to try to kiss me or whatever, you know, so it takes that element out of there. And it brings you into the space of complete and pure open heart. Open your heart. Let yourself be served. You get a blindfold on your eyes, so it also takes away the element of expectation from your eyes. And once your sight is removed, you really experience things so much differently. I've had things put in my mouth that I would normally, when I look upon them, think that they were delicious. But without seeing it, like a piece of chocolate, for example, or a banana, I was like, what do you put in my mouth? That's gross. Take it out. But it was actually a banana.
Oh, wow.
And then there's the senses of sound, of scent, of taste, of just nice soft touch, or a little bit of, you know, fingernails, or a purr in the ear, or a soft bell.
Well, this sounds really important, because so many of us are really kind of pushed out of our bodies. We're up in our heads being logical and trying to be reasonable. So getting back into the body sounds like a really important thing. And then, of course, people are getting oxytocin, so that'd be really good for their health, too.
Very much so. And it also brings you down into that vulnerable space of surrender, of allowing someone else to do something for you. And I know, and that has been a huge practice for me of allowing myself to be open to receive. Giving is such a big piece of our society, but receiving is something just as important.
And especially for women, don't you think? It's really hard for women sometimes to receive because they're so busy giving to their husbands, their boyfriends, their children, their employers, their community. This whole model of giving is a really huge female overlay.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. You can burn yourself out.
So does your character, does she know how to ask for what she wants? I think that is really the big message of your book, isn't it?
Yeah, it is about acknowledge, really coming into your power and finding the strength within yourself to be able to stand for who you are no matter what the consequences are. And as far as asking for what she wants, she really learns how. It's definitely a process. You know, nobody's perfect, and my characters certainly aren't perfect. But she learns how to step into that place and allow someone else to give her that guidance and that strength.
Rachel, we just got a few minutes left here, so let's go for it.
IndigoGo.com / Rachel Adair, Adair Dawson, Dawson. Please visit. And I can leave you with this little, this is a piece from the initiation of Lady Caroline. Mm-hmm. And this is a time when Diego is gone for a few months and she's waiting for him to come home. Caroline was restless and could not sleep. Diego had been gone for almost 6 months. This was not her first sleepless night. She tossed and turned in the bed, throwing the covers off and putting them back on, fluffing her pillow over and over again, watching Sean sleep soundlessly next to her, until finally she got up and went into the kitchen. She pulled out her favorite teapot and some special dried roses, dipped the ladle into the pot of water left simmering over the coals, poured it into her teapot, and waited for her tea to brew. Sean opened the kitchen door to find her sitting at the table enjoying the fragrance of roses steaming against her face. He rubbed the sleep out of his eyes as he settled himself in the chair next to her. Caroline breathed a heavy sigh but said nothing. Sean pushed his chair back, gathered himself a teacup, then settled himself once more at her side. Caroline filled his glass and took her hand into his. She couldn't bear to look at him. She'd even rather the silence not be broken. She was so tired, her face brimmed with tears. She felt Sean's gaze upon her. His concern was palpable, yet he knew her sorrow. It had been far too long since Diego's last letter, and good news it was not. He spoke of finding his parents dead after a fire and encountering burnings throughout the country. He spoke of the need to find safety in the treacherous journey ahead. But at least Enrique was with him. Of that, they could be reassured. Would his letter make it to them? He could not be sure, so he was short and to the point, leaving nothing revealing nor incriminating. He would return home as soon as possible, and for that, they could not wait. But wait, they must, for they had no choice. It had been 3 months since that letter arrived, and it had already been delayed, too. News from Spain was harrowing at best. The country was in turmoil. With the internal conflict, the Inquisition was out of control. Rumors of live burnings blazed through the English countryside. Caroline had a hard time keeping herself in a state of equanimity. Sean's strong facade was beginning to waver as well. That's the beginning of that chapter.
Yes, well, that's very interesting. You're leaving us hanging there. We're wondering, what's going to happen? Yeah. Well, okay. So once again, tell the listeners where they can find you. and how they can get that sensuality salon by helping you get your book published.
I'll also be at the Gaia Festival this weekend in Northern California. I'll be hosting a sensuality salon there for one of the nights. And my books will be on sale there as well. So you can find me at the Elephant Bowl is the booth that I'll be co-inhabiting at the Gaia Festival this weekend.
And the Gaia Festival in which city?
It's in Laytonville, California.
Laytonville, California. And once again, the website where you're taking donations to sponsor your book is Indiegogo/Rachel Dawson Adair.
Rachel at Indiegogo.com/Rachel Adair Dawson.
I got out the words transposed. Sorry about that.
One more time. Indiegogo.com/Rachel Adair Dawson.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, thank you, Rachel. It was really a pleasure meeting you at the EcoSex Symposium in Portland, Oregon, and I'm really glad to have you on the Shame Free Zone tonight. And for thanks, Rachel. So for our listeners, I'm going to be talking to Aaron Pedro de la Sol. He is a former police officer, and we're going to be talking about a nonprofit organization that he is heading up, which is called Our Fallen. We're actually going to be talking about some of the individual stories of the widows of officers who have been killed in the line of duty. So it may not sound like a really cheery topic, but I think it's a really worthwhile one. And if you like, crime stories, certainly I'm sure it's going to be quite intriguing. Even if it is a little bit on the sad side. Okay, well, we're the Shame Free Zone. We cover every topic, and I hope to see you here again Monday. Thanks so much, and good night.